This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 13 for February 24th, 2011. Hey, it's lucky number 13. I always wondered if we get 10 or more shows out the door, and it looks like we've made it all the way to 13. It's a snowy night in Omaha, but I know that it's not snowy in some other places. And so tonight, we got some of the old regulars back, and we'll have a guest that we'll introduce here in just a second. First of all, I've got Brian Burgess. Brian is a blogger over at simplehelp.net, and he sometimes blogs at theaverageguy.tv. We need to get a little more of that going on. Brian, how are you today?
Yeah, I know. How's it going, Jim?
Just put you on the spot right at the beginning of the show.
Yep. Yeah. Very end of me.
Good. What you been up to lately, Brian?
Kind of doing some word of mouth PC repair for some people around the community here. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been into lately.
Fixing stuff. There's never a shortage of things to fix for people when it comes to computers. So
there's
a lot to do. Back with us again this week. And Andrew, I don't know why you keep putting up with the punishment of the Home Tech Show. You do. Andrew Morris, welcome again to the Home Tech Show.
Yeah, hi Jim. Beautiful day down here in sunny Melbourne.
You know, I'm anxious to talk to you when it's winter there. You know,
look, a couple of weeks ago you could have excused it for being winter. It was raining cats and dogs and cold as what else. So
did the floodwaters up north recede? Are they kind of cleaning up from that mess up there?
Yeah, the guy I sit next to at work, he was up there a couple of weeks ago. His family are up there in Brisbane, and he was saying you'd barely know that there's been any flooding. So
really?
Just a bit of silt left, and you know, the cleanup's been phenomenal.
Okay.
All the university kids all set to and helped clean up, which is good.
You know, when that first happened, you sent me some pictures, and it kind of reminded me of New Orleans, you know, when Katrina came through in New Orleans, and that brought that city to a standstill, and I really thought that would there as well, but it sounds like they're back on their feet.
Yeah, not quite the same magnitude as New Orleans. It was more just water levels as opposed to, you know, a hurricane coming through and just decimating the place. So
ripping roofs off and knocking buildings down.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Well, welcome again. We're glad it's summer there and winter here in the north. Good to have you. We've got a guest with us tonight, Gordon Schmidt. Gordon is G-Wade Tech over at you're G-Wade Tech just about everywhere, right, Gordon?
Try to be.
Right? Yeah, so that is your Twitter. On Twitter, you're G-Way Tech as well. Is that right?
Yep.
And your blog is myknee-jerkreaction.wordpress.com. What do you write over there?
Basically anything technology from when I get time to write to things I'm working on.
Okay. So you're kind of an IT guy helping people. I mean, that's kind of the common thread here, right? You're one of those guys that family, relatives.
Yep.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
IT by day for work, and then IT by my free time. So
yeah, what do you do there at work? What's your
technical architect?
Okay,
for cargo.
What does that mean?
So I work on two specific applications: a credit application, and then a travel and expense application for cargo.
Oh, okay, all right, very cool.
Keeps me busy.
Yeah. Well, you know, you and I have been chatting back and forth, and we're all connected because of the Home Server Show. And so I thought it was I've been chatting with you, and I thought it'd be fun to get you on the show. Actually, Christian just pinged me on Skype, so we may yet get him in the show. I'll converse with him here in just a second. So one of the things, you know, last week I went on a little – I wouldn't call it a rant, but maybe a little soul searching to talk, you know, to kind of ask the question – you know, what do I want to do with this show? And we had started off with the idea of simple kind of tech help, and we kind of morphed into some more heavy tech stuff. And I kind of asked the question, do we want to move back to that? I think after a week of talking with you guys and thinking about some things, I kind of landed on this idea of tech guys helping tech guys. So. You know, as we progress with the show going forward, you know, I just kind of wanted to let you guys know, let the listeners know. We'll bring in topics kind of around the things that we do most. You know, we just talked about that here a second ago, We all do kind of family tech support in some way, and there's like little simple tips and tricks, things that we know to do. And I know about you guys, but I know when I'm fixing somebody's computer and they say, "How did you know that?" And I said, "I listen to a lot of tech podcasts." And so those things often, you know, help me do that. So tech guys helping tech guys will kind of be our motto as we roll forward. And certainly if you want to give us ideas, if you have questions, if you want to put a topic, a little bug in my ear about something you'd like to have us talk about, you can send me an email, podcast at theaverageguy.tv, and that'll get us at least get it on the radar. And we can discuss that in future shows. If you want to try podcasting as well, you know, we have Gordon tonight as a guest. I do like to bring guests on. So if you're interested and you got something you want to share, again, send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll see maybe about getting you on the show as well. Hey guys, last week we talked a little bit about a new laptop that I had ordered. I don't know if it was in yet last week, but it did show up. It is a HP, Andrew, help me out here. It's a DM1Z, but what's the model? Is it a,
it's one with the AMD APU in it.
Yeah. But is it a Pavilion? It's not a Pavilion, right?
I think it is. I think it is in the Pavilion lineup. Okay.
So HP Pavilion DM1Z. You can go out and Google that if you're interested in seeing that. It's a little 11.6 inch screen. Kind of a laptop, but it's, you know, super light. The big questions I had around it were battery life and kind of usability. The keyboard is fantastic. I wish I could kind of show it to the folks listening. Keyboard's fantastic. The touchpad that you use for the mouse is terrible. And Andrew, even after you had me kind of work with the original drivers from the manufacturer, it still didn't work very well. So I still struggle with that. I think I'll add a USB or a Bluetooth dongle. You know, a little micro Bluetooth that goes in there for a mouse. And because I don't think it's got Bluetooth standard in it. Although if it did, that'd be great. But at least I'll go to a Bluetooth mouse to work with it. But you'd think the 11-inch screen would be a little small. No, it's actually fantastic for a very portable, light laptop, net top, I guess is maybe you might call it. So fantastic. Andrew, you'd asked me about the wife approval factor on that, right?
Yeah.
You're thinking about getting that. I'd say yeah all the way. As long as you can get over the touchpad, it's speedy. I haven't charged it yet this week. I charged it up on Sunday. I took it into work, and I've been using it just kind of sparingly, not a ton, but some. I haven't charged it yet. I probably have maybe an hour worth of time on it.
That's pretty impressive, really, for a new machine straight out of the box. I usually I find take, you know, 3 or 4 charge cycles to get that sort of battery life out of them. So that's pretty impressive, really.
Yeah. No, it was very good. So if you want to look at that, just Google DM1Z, HP DM1Z, and you'll look at that. It's available only here in the U.S., That's kind of why Andrew asked me about it. He doesn't have access to it yet there in Australia. But a good little laptop if you're looking for something light. It's got a webcam built into it. Pretty good picture. I was talking with John on it John's in Canada. And a pretty good little picture. Something I could imagine me carrying it around at a conference, at a tech conference. You can and it's got that, and Andrew, help me out here. It's got this little boot up feature, right? That you can, it boots, instead of booting right into Windows, it boots into, what was that called? What did HP call that, Andrew? Do you remember?
It's a cut down Linux distribution that on the web is called Splashtop, and I think HP call it QuickWeb.
Yeah, that's right, QuickWeb.
And it gives you go on.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say it gives you a version of the Chrome web browser. It gives you Skype. And it gives you a couple of other Instant Messenger clients, doesn't it, Jim?
Yeah, it does. Now, I'll be honest with you. I didn't mess with it very much. I kind of exited out. I enabled it. Then I would exit out of it to go into Windows. I've been primarily interested in doing some live writer stuff. I've been using it to post some blog entries. But so I haven't used that part yet. But it is very quick. It boots in about 3 seconds to that kind of that internal, you know, quick boot piece. And then if you want, you can bypass it and go right into Windows. So, Andrew, a good recommendation on that. And I'm working on I took about 4 or 5 pages of notes over the last 2 or 3 days.
You are writing notes like a demon when you pull the thing out of the box, too.
Yeah. So, Andrew, it was Sunday night, and I knew it was Monday there. And so I pinged him on Skype and said, hey, you want to watch me unbox this laptop? And he was like, well, sure, I guess. So I did this live unboxing on Skype with him, and there were some guys at work maybe that were watching, and so I was holding it up and, you know, showing him and stuff, and it was kind of fun. But yeah, good little laptop. I think I'm gonna like working with it, and I took a bunch of notes, so I'll get a blog post up and out on our site here in the next week or so, as soon as I can unbury from some of the things that I'm doing at work. One of the other things I talked about on the show last week was the fact that I was having trouble getting my Xbox 360 and my Media Center PC connected.
Did you figure that out then, Jim?
Yeah, I did, actually. So I found I'd lost the notes. If you could see how messy the area I'm in is, you would understand why. But I lost the notes, and then I found them again, and I thought, okay, before I lose them again, I am going to fix this thing. So I went right into the living room, fired up the Xbox, got it going, and really you go like into the network settings or into the system settings, into the memory, into the Xbox dashboard, and there's a media center, whatever, storing the memory for something. And all you have to do is delete that and then reset it up. And, you know, you go, if you've connected your Xbox 360 to Media Center, it gives you a little code, and you go back to your Media Center, put that code in, and it makes the connection, and it hasn't dropped since. So I'm sure there's a how-to on that out there somewhere, but that works really well. And most of all, the wife isn't bothering me about it anymore. So, oh, crap, she's listening. So... That part's done, and it's good to have that piece done and out of the way.
Yeah, okay. We all have a high wife acceptance factor.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? You don't realize how dependent that you get on those kinds of things until they break. So we record shows on our media center, NCIS, Castle, you know, some of the popular ones. And the family couldn't watch him back because we watch him through the Xbox. I don't make a connection between the Media Center PC and the TV, kind of on purpose, because I don't really want another remote for that. And so they watch it through the Xbox. When that was broke, it was not good. I mean, they were pretty patient with me on it, but it's still not good. It's just amazing how dependent you get on that. Brian, do you watch TV through an Xbox?
No, I rarely watch TV at all, okay, to tell you the truth. Live TV, except when it's football season.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about that. Gordon, what's kind of your media center setup? How are you guys consuming media at your place?
We have a high def antenna on the roof, and then otherwise it's just Xbox, either Netflix or ESPN3 through Xbox Live.
Oh, okay. So you do the Xbox 360 deal.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see. So I just tried to bring Christian in. Christian, if you're listening on the live show, you're going to need to upgrade your Skype client to make it work for us tonight. So do that real fast. Okay. And how's so do you watch everything through the Xbox then?
So,
Gordon?
Yeah, most of it. I mean, the high def antenna is a direct feed into the TV tuner in the back of the TV, or TVs in the house.
Okay.
Hello. Used to have cable, but got rid of that because it started getting too expensive. So.
Yeah, Christian, we can hear you now.
We can hear you, Christian.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's fine.
I'm on.
Where are you at?
I'm in the Hampton Inn.
Yeah?
Hampton Inn, guest computer, Hudson River, and I've tried just about everything to get my own computer connected without having to pay for an access code, and that didn't work.
No, that's no good. So you're on the business computer. You got a headset plugged into it?
Yeah, I brought my recording headset with
me. Nice. At the Hampton Inn,
yeah.
Your own headset, you're on the business computer, you're in the business office or that little lobby thing, right, that they provide the computer. You're not out in the middle of the lobby or anything, are you?
Nope.
Okay.
Hardcore, man.
That's nice, man. That's show commitment right there.
Truly remote.
I love it.
I know.
You're sitting in one of those little phone boxes with a PC in it, are you, Christian?
Right.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Christian's on a holiday, and Christian, appreciate you getting it pulled together so you could join us tonight. Brian, you had a few things. Christian, we'll bring you in here in just a sec. Brian, you had a few things you wanted to chat about tonight, some of them around kind of malware and viruses, and why don't you take it from there?
Well, yeah, I mean, this week I've been doing some word of mouth PC repair, and, you know, when you say that, it's usually an infected system. You know, like my dad called me the other day saying, oh my God, there's some crazy virus thing going on here. What am I supposed to do? Turns out it was one of those fake scamwares that, you know, they look like an actual Microsoft official, program. And
right.
He ended up installing it, and it just got pretty ugly.
Yeah. So he did it charge him? Did it take his credit card number?
No, okay. I don't think it was anything to do with actually having to pay any money, but
okay. Yeah.
He called me right away, so I was able to kind of nip it in the butt before it got too out of hand.
Oh, good.
So.
Good. What'd you use to help him fix that?
Yeah, so what I used was Super Anti-Spyware Portable.
Okay.
And I booted the computer into safe mode and then ran that. And it just picked up absolutely everything. I mean, it's a really, really good program.
Really?
Yeah.
So is that, did you put it on a USB key to make that work?
Yep. Right. Put it on a USB key and then just ran it from there. And
so boot to Windows, but put it in safe mode. And
yeah,
then once you're in safe mode, point it over to the USB key, run that. I assume it's just an executable then that's on the key, right?
Right. Yep.
And run that, and then it'll run it scanned. Did it need to update?
I ran the updates on it as well, so I had, you know, everything was up to date. So, but I've used it in the past before when fixing people's computers that were highly infected, and it really seems to do a good job. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, one of the other tools that I've used for that's Malwarebytes.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but I'll boot into safe mode with networking, and then load that and. Just update it right away and then run it. And that's also one of those super industrial strength antivirus ones that a lot of folks like to use. And it just gets rid of everything. So, but I hadn't heard of this one before, Brian. So super, say what it is again.
Super Anti-Spyware.
Okay.
And we'll put a link in that in the show notes. But I also ran
I was just going to say that's one of the ones in my repertoire as well whenever I find a machine that, you know, has been hosed by someone trying to accept a free antivirus software offer or something like that. It's a good one.
Yeah, I think you could probably do a whole show on those portable apps and the features that they offer.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and I tell folks, you know, at a minimum, you got to have Microsoft Security Essentials on there. And then I always, when I'm loading new operating systems, then I always put the AnyMalwareBytes on there and tell them, okay, once a month, whether you need it or not, just update it and run it. And that'll help clear off some stuff. And so far that works pretty well for some folks. But, you know, we all have kind of certain tricks that we do. Brian, is that the first time you'd used that application, or is that kind of in your toolbox?
No, that's in my toolbox. I've used it quite a bit. So it works really well. But, you know, if you have a computer that's too infected, a lot of times it's just easier to blow away the hard drive and rebuild it
right after
backing up the, you know, the user's data, of course, but
yeah. Yeah. One of the things I like to do, back it up to my own home server first. So, you
mm-hmm.
know, run it, plug it in, back it up to the home server, get an image there where the, you know, we can go back to the data files, blow it away, put Windows back on it, load their drivers, get them back, and then bring back just their data files. You know, scan those as well before you put them on. But,
right. Yep.
But, yeah. Christian, is that what do you guys use? I mean, what's your antivirus of choice, or what would you put in your toolbox from that standpoint?
Yeah, I agree with you. The Security Essentials is always the baseline for me. Even back when Defender was starting to come out, I always put that on there. But I'm getting used to having people use Avira antivirus. There is a freeware version and a premium version, and the premium version it's like $25, but the free version has all the same features that the premium version does, with the exception that once a day it shows an advertisement, but that's just an easy closeout dialogue, and it does a pretty good job of not taking up resources, but still having live active root protection. So
yeah, I've actually used that one too in the past. Just got kind of annoyed by having the nag screen, like you say, once a day pop up right on you. So mm-hmm.
Right, but the actual root protection is better than
it's a really good, yeah.
Yeah, I really like the Security Essentials just because it's so light. It just doesn't mess with you. You don't get any screens just about. In fact, sometimes I worry you don't get enough screens, right? I'm worried for the end user. Windows Update takes care of it. I think folks got to have that as a base. And then I think go with whatever you're comfortable with or what you've used and have seen proven as kind of an antivirus solution. There's a couple good – I mean, there are a couple really good ones out there, and it kind of just depends on what you're most comfortable with. So, all right, any other thoughts on antivirus? All right. Very good. Yeah, real common problem. It seems like it goes – I don't know about for you guys, but it seems like it goes in bursts for me. I'll get a whole bunch of phone calls in a – maybe it's tied into their activities or something. But, you know, it's bad enough to get a virus, but then some of these try and get money out of you. So, you know, they scare you and say, put 29 – you know, give us $29. And I tell people, look, your antivirus company's never going to try and sell you that way. So don't ever – put your credit card information in.
Yeah, and the bottom line is, I mean, it's true, but, I mean, user error is, you know, 80%, 90% of the problem when computers do get infected. And it's just a good idea to familiarize yourself with just basic online security so you can avoid those situations.
Right, yeah. Always good to have a good backup too. So we talk a lot about backup from that standpoint. Speaking of backup, we were talking before the show started, we were mentioning that Windows 7 Service Pack 1 is now in the wild. And I actually had to go and check the Windows updates. I haven't been paying much attention to Service Pack 1, but it showed up on my radar. Gordon, you had mentioned that you backed up your PC before you installed it. Or were you that worried that it might do something that you couldn't recover from?
I've had Windows cause issues before on bricking USB ports and audio issues and other stuff after service packs. So a little hesitant, but with the Windows Home Server, no problem.
Yeah, doesn't that go back to and someone's mic is scratching. Andy, that might be your cord on your – I think that is. Or maybe that's Christian. Christian, check your mic there. Make sure it's not rubbing. But, you know, it seemed like back in the NT days that everybody was worried about service packs. I haven't really worried about a service pack for a long time. Andrew, do I need to be worried about service packs at this point anymore? Or is that just something that I can let go?
Oh, look, I think if you got, from my perspective, if you've got automatic updates turned on, I think the machine pretty much takes care of itself these days. Been having a bit of a look around regarding Service Pack 1 to see when Microsoft are going to enforce it. They usually tend to enforce a Service Pack a few months after they go live on the internet. But, you know, I had it come up in my important updates, but haven't seen anything regarding when it might go mandatory yet.
Okay. Yeah,
they'll push it out as an active, yeah.
I actually downloaded mine from my TechNet subscription, so.
Was it available?
That's another benefit. You get some software and upgrades first,
yeah,
for the general public.
And any benefit I mean, to install that thing early?
I don't know. I mean, I've had a bit of a look at what it puts on the machine. From what I could tell, it's pretty much a roll-up of every patch that they've released since the product went gold. You know, from mine, I think my 32-bit machine at home downloaded about 70 meg. My wife's 64-bit machine downloaded about 80 meg of data.
Because it was, you know, it downloaded just what it needed, right?
Yeah, they've fixed it this time around. It's a download on demand, so it only downloads what it needs.
Okay.
Which is really nice, I think.
Yeah, so I wonder, that gets me thinking I should look at mine and see, because I'm pretty faithful about my updates. And mine was 76 or 73.6 meg. That's pretty large, I would think, isn't it? For an update? So maybe I thought it would be smaller since I'm pretty faithful with my updates.
Yeah, I think the maximum,
that's about the
maximum
minimum
size.
You think Christian, you think that's the minimum?
Yeah, you can't. It's not like the service pack is just how many updates you do or don't have. There's a minimum baseline that has to get downloaded. So,
okay.
In this case, the range was 74 to 79 megabytes, up to 900 megabytes through automatic updates.
The 64-bit version of the service pack, because I downloaded them manually. The 64-bit version is 930 meg, and the 32-bit version is 550.
Wow.
So there's a fairly big difference.
Yeah. Christian, are you at all worried about this service pack on your PCs? Are you gonna install that right away? Have you already? Or?
Well, yeah, on my PC, it came right up, and I went ahead and installed it and had no problem. My dad went ahead and installed Service Pack 1, and it botched his PC. So
really?
He had fun the whole day trying to roll it back, because it would apparently he tried it like 5 times in a row, and it would get to the reboot phase, and it would start with that weird boot screen where it says, you know, updating registry setting, you know, number out of total number. And it kept getting to this certain number and just hanging up for hours, and it wouldn't go anywhere. And there's reports out there that it's due to the language packs being installed, and he uninstalled all those and tried it again, and he still didn't get anywhere. So to this day, he has still been unsuccessful with Service Pack. Fortunately, though, he was able to roll back.
Is there any compelling reason for him to go up to Service Pack 1, Christian?
Probably not, but it's just one of those things where you want conformity across your networks, so you don't want half your PCs service pack whatever, and then half your PCs don't have the update. So, and there are minor tweaks and adjustments to the operating system by having that service pack on there. It's not just the overall, oh, everyone throw a bunch of updates together and see what it does. They're actually tweaking things that just, they're so insignificant, no one really cares, but... to have everything on the same service pack level from a network standpoint is important. But from a home user standpoint, I probably wouldn't update it until more development takes place. But, I mean, I always just plow right into things. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't even think twice. I mean, it would have just rolled with the – in fact, whenever – so what's today? Today's Thursday. So it'll probably install – does it do it on Tuesday? I don't even know how that – I'll be honest with you. I don't even
Tuesday,
know.
Yeah.
So I would have just let it go, and I probably still will. I probably won't do much with it. Now, your dad, you guys are home server users. I assume he could always roll back to last night's backup if he needed to?
Right.
Yeah. So it's funny because I rarely hear of a service pack hosing, but maybe I'm not connected enough to enough people doing it to know for sure.
Yeah. After I installed mine, I've been having some strange issues going on.
Really?
With my PC as well. So I think I'm going to go ahead and roll it back and try again.
I think I back up my PC to the home server tonight, make sure I lock that thing in place before it goes. Yeah. Huh. All right. Well, so there's
just strange, weird power issues. I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but I haven't dug through Event Viewer enough to figure it out.
So, Gordon, did you say you did update, and have you had any problems?
I haven't had any problems yet.
Okay.
I think it's Microsoft has to deal with a little different issue with the service packs. They got wide range of hardware they're trying to support, and customs to manufacturers, it gets difficult.
Yeah. You know, interesting, I support some PCs at our church, and I just let those roll, and of course those will upgrade this week. So I know my wife's listening right now. We should probably watch the PCs as they update to Service Pack 1. And of course, everything now that goes wrong with them will get blamed on Service Pack 1. So that's always the nice thing about updating a big update like that. You can always blame it. Oh, yeah, that was Service Pack 1. And, you know, I did recently, 2 weeks ago, I put a home server in at the church and started backing those PCs up just for that very reason. So it was I'm kind of glad I did that now. I do need to check in on it. And make sure they are backing up correctly, but probably should do that this weekend before those things roll out. Any other thoughts, Andrew? You had another topic you wanted to talk about.
Oh, I was just going to say on the Windows Home Server on the SP1 front, my PC that I use at home prior to the SP1 had a performance rating of 2.0, and once I put Service Pack 1 on it, the Windows Experience Indicator is now at 2.1.
Oh.
Sorry, 2.2. 2.2.
So a little bit backwards.
You know, no, it's gone up. So it's gone up from 2.0 to 2.2.
Oh, 2.0. So, I thought you said 2.5. Sorry.
Yeah, so potentially there's a bit of code streamlining in there. So
okay, 32-bit or 64-bit?
The machine I use is 32-bit.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I didn't realize the machine had a 64-bit capable processor in it when I was first installed it, and I've never gone back yet. So.
Yeah, but you could, at any point, you could move that thing up to 64-bit with just a reinstall, right?
Yeah, but then I'd have to recustomize it. And
yeah,
don't know if I can be bothered, really. Right. I'm waiting for the AMD Fusion processor to come out on a embedded motherboard. So once that comes out, I might upgrade the whole box and make it a bit lower powered. And
sure. You're kind of keen on that Fusion technology, aren't you?
Yeah, it just seems to rate really well, and you know, for what I do with my machine at home, which is a bit of web surfing and running a torrent client, and you know, the occasional bit of photo editing. If I put a good video card in it, then it's going to do the trick.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I, you know, I've been running a Core i3 as my main box at home, and that's a low power you know, chip, and it powers just about everything. And now I'm not a heavy gamer. It's not the beast like Christian has, but it certainly it does what I need it to do for the, you know, and I got five of you in Skype. There's five of us in Skype, and it seems to be working fine. So, you know, that low power technology seems to be getting better and better and better. So
yeah, and the Core i3 is my backup option, but you know, I'm waiting to see what the price point comes out once the manufacturers go mainstream with the AMD APU.
All right, good stuff. Christian, you've been doing some stuff this week, and I know you had a topic you wanted to bring in. If you're ready, why don't you jump right on in?
Sure. So I was working last week on going back and revisiting speech recognition in Windows 7 and just seeing if I could get it to be any more realistic than what it was the last time I tried it. Because the last time I tried it, I had mixed results from, you know, it would do all right, but there was nothing really special to it. It was just like, sure, maybe you can send an email from what you said, and the text may or may not get it right when you send it. So I tried to revisit it, and I decided rather than configuring it for a headset microphone, I would run the entire setup using the desktop microphone with the new Windows Live web camera. So I went ahead and put in the webcam and got it all configured. And then I went through the speech recognition setup where it learns to train your voice better. So I kind of got that going, and it seemed to be detecting rather well. So I said, you know, maybe I can see if I can get any functionality out of this. So I was kind of browsing on the internet, seeing, you know, what can I do with this? And I found this really cool thing that Microsoft just kind of released out on the edge and no one really knows about, called Windows 7 Speech Macros. And the speech macros are just like anything you would use if you were writing a macro for Word or for Excel. And it's designed so that you can write and create your own custom audio commands. And the audio commands are really easy to create. You can create them in mass production. You can have the computer reply based on your response. So literally, I've been making a database of macros. So I can say, computer, what's the weather like in Buffalo? And it'll automatically bring up Internet Explorer with the weather in Buffalo. And I can do it for any city. I've configured all my favorites on the internet with it. I can say, computer, go to sleep, and it does it. I can say, computer, wake up server on this network, and it goes right ahead and does it. So it's kind of cool because I've gotten it to a point where it's not me memorizing the commands that are normally part of Windows 7. It's, no, you made those commands, so you know them, and you can create variants of that same command so that no matter what you're doing or how you're saying it with variation, it works every time. And it's been spot on accurate with the macros, even more so than the normal Windows 7 macros. I've rarely had it not be able to properly execute the command I got it. So it's really cool. You can be standing up and you can be at the foot of your door, you know, 10, 20 feet away and say, computer, go to sleep, or computer, lock command functionality. And it does it right off the bat. So that's what I've been working on, is writing those macros.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, is there anything you can't do, Christian?
I'm working on that list.
Wow. All right. So it's that sounds pretty powerful. I mean, a list of commands that you can just basically say, and it just does what you tell it to do. And so do you have to say computer? Can you give it another name?
Oh, yeah, you can do whatever. Literally, you can do whatever you want. Yeah, it's just like in chat here. It's exactly like the Star Trek computer. You can program it to reply to whatever you said. So you can, in this case, one of the macros I have, I can either say, computer, show me what the weather looks like, and it'll show it to me. Or I can say, computer, tell me what the weather looks like, and it says it to me. But yeah, you can, you don't have to address it at all. You can just say the command, or you can give the computer a name. I normally like to put computer in front of it because then it kind of clicks with me to remember that it's a command I wrote. Because none of the normal Windows 7 commands start with computer or anything like that. So
right. So you record the command once, and then assign. And how hard is it then to create these the macro itself to bring up the web browser? How does that work?
It's great. You don't even have to record what you're saying. What you do is there's a little tray icon that sits like next to the speech recognition in your tray bar.
Okay.
And you go ahead and like right click it and hit new macro, and it gives you options. So you can just, it can be like what you say represents a keyboard shortcut or a keystroke. So like if I wanted to create a macro that said computer print current page, I could put in the macro control P, which is the keyboard shortcut for print, and it would do it. I can also make a really complex XML version, which is the kind of more complex stuff that allows you to do the weather and that kind of stuff. But most of them are the most simple ones to do is it tells you the name of the program you want to execute and any arguments you want to pass to it. So like if you want to open up, like if I say computer, watch Star Trek, my macro would be, okay, the program, you select Internet Explorer, whatever your browser is, as your program. And then as your command line, you type in the name of the web address you want it to go to. So it's you don't have to say anything. It's not like it's recording your voice as the macro. You just type in what it is you want to say. And you can also optionally type in what you want the computer to reply to you, or just have it do it. But it's pretty complex audio enhancement with little knowledge required.
So on a scale of 1 to 5, you know, 1 being really easy and 5 being really difficult, what do you rate it from a go ahead.
It's definitely a 4.5 because you have the regular speech recognition, which is really just starting up the speech recognition and being able to get used to the computer recognizing your voice and being able to properly get the communication to work back and forth and the commands, but to actually install the macro package and then be able to add your own custom commands is very easy. And they do even have some sample macros on the Microsoft website. I'll include it in the show notes, that has the sample weather macros and stuff. So,
wow, very cool. So wait a minute. Let me, one being very easy and five being very difficult. 1 to 5.
I flipped that around.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so like a one, right? I mean, it's something the average person could pick up and install and get working fairly quickly. Wow.
Right. That's pretty cool. It's pretty self-explanatory, and I love it. I know, and now whenever it's hand-free half the time, you know. So
yeah, Brian, I sense some how-tos for the averageguy.tv on how to make this work.
Yeah. Hey. Sounds good to me.
I'm sensing that across the Skype the Skype waves. That's pretty cool. Has anyone else seen this or tried this or used this before?
I've tried it, yeah, in the past, and doing some dictation type stuff, not using the speech recognition macros or anything like that. But there's a whole tutorial if you go in to the speech recognition portion of Windows, and it walks you through it. So, and you got to train your voice for the computer to recognize it and things like that. But I guess, yeah, I played with it a little bit, not as much as Christian apparently. Yeah. But
nice. So hey. Christian, how many commands do you have on your computer now then for this? How many?
Probably about 20.
Really?
Probably about, yeah, because I took the same source code from my Magic Wake on LAN and wrote a argument-based command line version, so I can say computer wake up and then the name of any computer in my network, and it'll send the magic packet. I have – it's awesome.
That is nice.
I know. You don't even think anything's going on in the background, you know. I'll be upstairs, you know, computer enter personal information, you know, launch subsonic server, go watch Star Trek, go to sleep, wake up server computer. You know, it gets to a point of infinity where you can do whatever you want with it.
Wow.
So the more macros, the smarter your computer is.
Interesting. Gordon, have you tried any of the speech recognition stuff?
I played around with it in the built-in in Windows Vista and Windows 7, but haven't taken any further. The Xbox that I have has the Kinect on it, so I use a little bit of it there, but that's about it.
Guys, we're on the very verge of that actually being very useful, and I think 5 years ago it was just crap. And a lot of folks tried it in Vista, and it just didn't work very well. You know, there was a whole training thing that you had to go through, and it was kind of a mess. I think we're finally to the point where maybe the PCs can handle it. And you know, certainly what we saw, we talked a little bit about this last week with Jeopardy and Watson. Certainly we saw we're pretty darn close to some pretty good AI. And at least at this point, you know, if we've got a solution here that sounds pretty easy to do and works, you know, pretty flawlessly. Christian, the one question I have for you, and you have to be a Star Trek nerd to get this joke, but do you look up in the air and say, computer, when you...
yeah. Computer, show me the lights as I walk out to the room.
That's right. It always cracked me up how Riker would look up, like, you know, like...
The, oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
If you think about Next Generation, and he just always looked up and said, computer. And you're like, why would you need to look up? What was in the air that – was the computer on the ceiling or
– You never knew where the computer was, you know. It's just –
The computer's a divine power.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways. Well, Christian, that's pretty cool. So if you could ship some of those notes over to Brian to include in the show notes. That'd be great, and any tutorials like that. And Brian, I'm serious. Any how-tos on that would be helpful to have. I think that's pretty cool. I mean, that's some good stuff, and I think something the average person can get pretty excited about maybe using. It's still, but guys, let me ask you this: does it still? And maybe Christian, you don't feel weird, but for us, is it weird talking to the computer?
I mean, I think it's a bit odd.
Yeah, isn't that kind of it? Yeah. Does even though we've grown up watching that in sci-fi. you know, we watch Star Trek.
Still,
we watch.
Still doesn't make it right, does it?
It is kind of weird. Christian, you don't have any. Do you feel funny when you say the commands to the computer?
My family looks at me like I'm hard when they just hear me upstairs, like, computer, minimize that. You know, computer, switch to desktop. They're like, what the heck is going on? But I don't know. I'm kind of used to it.
Okay. All right. I just didn't know if it felt funny. Sometimes, you know, go ahead.
I think the risk of it is when the computer answers back and it's like, you want me to do what?
Yeah.
You say, turn on the basement PC and it's going to go, no, do it yourself.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And maybe for fitness reasons, you need to get up and and turn that basement computer on. But, well, cool stuff, Christian. That's pretty cool. Awesome. Yeah, very good stuff.
Hey, how long does it take to do the voice training, Christian? Because I know one of the challenges that I had, especially with things like Dragon Dictate in the past, was, you know, the Australian accent's a little bit broader than I think a lot of the developers intend the voice recognition to be. So how did you find it, learning your voice?
There was like the like standard basic thing, and then I did like one advanced training session. It took about 15-20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
But it seemed to, after I did it, it was much more accurate.
Although your English is pretty precise, Christian. I mean, you have you dictate very well. You don't slur like I do or cut the words off or never finish a sentence or – you know, so that I bet that helps. So you speak very clear and concise. So I bet it picked up on your voice pretty quick.
Yeah, well, that's why when I write the macros, I always start it with computer comma. That way, at least it cues that word.
Right.
So people, it will pick up the word computer, and then it'll know, okay, he's going for a macro. So that's the thinking.
So it's always listening to you then, right? I mean, the computer's always listening for the command.
Right. You can say start listening, which keeps it always on, and then you can say stop listening, and it puts it like in a sleep mode and waits for you to say start listening again, or you can just completely turn it off.
Oh, that's cool.
So are you wearing headphones or mouthpiece or anything?
Nope. It's coming out of the microphone in the camera, right? In your cam?
Which I thought would have been – yeah, I would have thought that would have been the last source of accurate voice dictation, but it turns out to be the most convenient and the best.
Huh.
So, I mean, I can be standing 20 feet away from the computer and the command goes through fine.
Yeah, so Christian, one of the questions that's just come out of the live chat is, do you need to train for each room? So I guess, that's from the other gym. So I guess the question is, does the ambient background noise play a part in how well it picks up your voice? Or although I guess you kind of just answered that, if you're using a built-in mic or like a camera mic, then you're probably you're probably talking to it from halfway across the room anyway.
Right Exactly. But if you're using like if you're like on a laptop and you're using a headset, then it probably won't be as big of a thing. But like if you're in an airport and like you're using a laptop mic without a headset, then you might run into some issues.
Yeah. So can you pick up your macros and your voice control and pick it up, say, from the PC you've got in your study and move it out to the one in the lounge room fairly easily?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can just – yeah, that's actually what I did with Rich, is I zipped up all my macros and sent it to him to play around with. So.
Oh, cool. And so then all he has – and then all you have to do is train it to recognize your voice, and it'll pick up the macros – automatically, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the macros that anyone writes work for anyone. So,
is that something you could just put in the Dropbox across multiple computers and keep them all synced?
Yeah, in theory. Actually, I think the default folder is in the My Documents, but I actually haven't checked. But you should be able to change that and put it to the Dropbox. That would make sense.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good application there. You know, Christian, we're going to have Rich on next week on the show, and we'll he'll have been working with it for a week, so we'll get his opinion on how well it's working for him, and what kind of applications he's using it for. So that'll be pretty cool. Cool, good work, Christian. Good wrap to Christian's Corner. And by the way, we're still looking for a Christian's Corner jingle. So if you're an aspiring musician and you want to have your music played on the Home Tech Show, write a little 30-second, maybe less than that, maybe 20-second or 15, little jingle that has the word Christian's Corner in it, and we'll play it here right here on the show. It'll be kind of fun. So, Christian, good work. Gordon, we had you on this week. We wanted to give you an opportunity to come on the show and talk a little bit about what you do. You had mentioned in the show notes that you're using a tool that I think we're all familiar with, but it's always good to have a review on, and that's SyncToy. And some folks use it than others, but why don't you talk a little bit about how you use that? And it's got a million applications to use, but how are you using that in your environment?
Yeah, so I just wanted to touch a little bit on the history of it, just for those that don't know. So I think of it as kind of like a utility application developed by Microsoft, originally in the Power Toy Pack for XP. It's very similar to what Live Mesh used to be, or like a Robocopy or Live Sync. How I use it is most of friends or family that I help with IT issues, they buy an external hard drive after talking to somebody that they need to back up, and then there's usually no good software to get the backups over without doing a manual copy over or setting up some kind of manual system. So putting SyncToy and then scheduling out in Task Scheduler and just kind of automating that. And of course, the real solution there is to probably just get a home server or do a cloud-based backup. But
well, but that, if that's what you have, that kind of solution works. And you know, SyncToy in itself doesn't have, I think this has been one of the knocks on it, is that it doesn't have a scheduler built in.
Yeah,
but you,
yep.
But you can use the scheduler built into Windows to
yep.
fire off those. Give me a little idea about how that works. I mean, so I've got a job. Go ahead and tell me how that works.
Yeah, so you can create your task scheduled job, and then you've got your different pairs that you set up within SyncToy.
Right.
And then you can either have it call out in task schedule or just individual one, and then you could have multiple ones set up for daily backups, weekly, monthly. It has three different options when you're setting up a pair. You can synchronize, which is move newer updated files or copied both ways, echo, and then they're copied left to right, so from the root directory to the final resting place directory, and then contribute, which is what I set it up as for friends and family in the task scheduler, and that copies from left to right, and then eventually once that backup drive was filled, you'd have to go in and delete the oldest ones and stuff, but it works pretty good, and it works better than some of the software that comes with Seagates or Western Digitals. And if you get the lower cost drives that don't have anything on it, they're just bare bone hard drives. So,
yeah, now that's version 2.1, I think, is the most recent, and that hasn't yep. been updated in a while. Are you aware of any updates coming out?
I'm not aware of any updates. So they haven't touched development on it in a while here. So we'll see if it stays.
Why break a good thing that's
yeah.
out there? You know, I use it a lot. If I have to move a lot of files from one directory to another, and I don't know about you guys, but if you try and use Windows Explorer or any Windows-based stuff, and you start moving the files, and it inevitably, right, one of them chokes for some reason, right, whatever it is. And then the whole thing just cancels out. At that point, you don't trust it, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the features that they tote with SyncToy is the fact that it keeps kind of it has a log output, so it'll note an error and then just keep going. It won't stop and kill at that error. So
yeah, that's what I like, and it verifies and it tells you if there was an error. Right, I transferred this many files, and these are the ones mm-hmm. that I had problems with, and it really for me it kind of. Especially when I'm a great example for what we do is when I do home server migrations and I've got to move files. Most of the time I'm copying files from my production box onto a test box to do some kind of home server testing. And so I want to move my entire music folder to get that done. That's 30 gig worth of files. Those are little tiny files, high probability of error on one of those files. Well, RoboCopy, listen to me. SyncToy, RoboCopy is another one. SyncToy does that really nice, and I kind of set it and forget it, come back yep. and see if there's any errors. But if you're moving production data for any reason, God, don't use the native Windows stuff.
No.
Although RoboCopy is a native app now since Windows 7, it's in the factory build.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
How do I find that?
Have to check that out.
From the command line, you run Robocopy.
Really?
Yeah.
From the switch? Yeah, or from command?
From command prompt, yeah.
All right, so I from search, I go CMD, right, to get the command.
Yep, and then just type in Robocopy, and there it is.
Robocopy. I got to spell it right first. Wow.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a purist still. Okay. I'm a bit hesitant of a graphical interface. So
the command line scares some people from time to time, and certainly not something I would throw at anybody from that standpoint.
So could you with Robocopy? Could you throw it into a batch file and then put that batch file into task scheduler and automated?
Yeah, we do a little bit of that at work, especially, you know, if you want to sync stuff between machines. You know, some people would say it's a pseudo backup. one of the things I'm looking for, though, and I think SyncToy fits the profile a little better, is the ability, especially for parents and people who don't have a home server, is so they can plug in an external USB hard disk and something running on the PC will go, oh, external storage, there's my backup folder, and just synchronize everything across to it.
Yep.
So that to me would be the ultimate in non-home server backup.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And SyncToy is so close. I think it is the flag Echo. I think when you set up your partners, so that it'll change whatever you've changed on your PC, it'll change on your destination.
Right. Correct. Yeah, keeps them in sync. Looks the same. Mirrors it.
Yeah, but I mean, for people who are getting on not as computer savvy or getting on in their years, to have to not only plug the device in but remember to open the app and then pick the profile they want to sync. The program's awesome. I mean, you know, have used it. And yeah, if they just went version 2.2 and put a scheduler in it, that'd be bang on.
Yeah, for the average guy, IT guy supporting friends and family, the way to go, I think.
Pretty easy tool to understand as well. Other Jim says out in chat, he says that Robo Copy was in Vista and Server 2003 R2 as well. So it's been out there a while. All 10 of us that used Vista. Got the ability.
I never had any issues. I don't know if I'm the only one.
Were you post Service Pack 1?
No, nope, I got it pre-ordered.
All right. Okay. Well, I always hear folks, you know, I think Vista got better right after Service. It's Service Pack 1. So,
yeah.
Christian, where do you land on the copy when you copy stuff? How do you approach that?
Yes, I've been using SyncToy for Windows Home Server.
Okay. Oh, the internet. He ran out of quarters at the hotel. We just lost Christian. Oh well, Christian, call back. I'll try and call him back here. Let's see if I can get him back on the line.
The other thing with SyncToy, I was going to say, is that I noticed when I was looking at it again, it's got a 32-bit and 64-bit edition. So.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll put that link out there in the show notes, for those as well. And you're right, I think that's available in both versions on that same site. So depending on what you're running, and I'd imagine you wouldn't want to run one on the other, and it wouldn't really work. If you had the 64-bit version, you tried to run it on the 32, that wouldn't work, right?
Yeah, I don't think that would be advised.
Wouldn't recommend it, Brian. Brian, do you in moving files around? You do anything different than Robocopy or SyncToy?
I use TerraCopy.
Really?
Which is a free program. They try to get you.
Oh yeah, it's always a winner.
It's always fun. All right, Ustream, you should be able to hear me now. If I can get a quick sound check to make sure that we are being heard in the stream. Okay, that's good. Thank you. Yeah, we had a major Skype failure. That's what it looks like when Skype just explodes. That was cool. Okay, let's bring Brian back. And let's get Christian here.
Hello.
Hey, Brian. We are on Ustream as well. Let's get Gordon back.
In 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, is your video on, Brian?
I'm getting it up.
Hey, Gordon's hey. Back.
It should be.
Andrew and I were talking a little bit ago.
Oh, yeah, good. Yeah. So what it did when it dropped, it left you two on. It left Andrew and Gordon on one call. It left Christian and Brian and I on another.
Nice. And explain that logic.
Yeah, I don't.
I was just saying to Gordon, perhaps Skype has something to do with TerraCopy these days, and the voice recognition software picked it up and canned the call.
Because yeah, literally, Brian, you said TerraCopy, and the whole thing just exploded.
Hey, there's Christian.
Christian, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, good. We can see you. That's good.
Can you see me? Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Don't have your video yet. Yeah, we can edit all that stuff out, so it's fine. The folks in the Ustream get the opportunity to really understand what it's like when a call explodes in the middle of a podcast. So that's why you have to listen to the show live, because you get the fun stuff. Brian, any luck on your video?
No. Do you want to call me back again?
Yeah, let me hang up. I'll call you right back. You guys stay. I'm gonna leave you guys in. We'll just do Brian.
All right.
You know, okay. Why isn't it? Doesn't it suck that we have to use Skype at times? That it's just so problematic, and yet it really is the only thing that works well.
I can't think of another application you'd use.
No, and we bought this group. There we go. We have some of your video, Brian. It's going kind of slow. All right,
there we go.
Good stuff. We're all back. All right, gentlemen. Thanks for putting up with the Skype failure. Just I got some wine just in time. Okay, so Brian, you were talking about TerraCopy.
I was.
I do it again.
Oh, yeah. It's gonna drop our call again.
There it goes.
I was talking about TerraCopy. It's a free program that you can use, and it's really fast. For transferring gigabytes of files around, and it's really easy to use. So
okay, another option if you're moving files. I guess I said this once, but I'll say it again. Never use Windows native transfer to do anything that has major amounts of files. I mean, copying one file or two files or right. I mean, your basic stuff is fine, but if you're moving a whole folder and it's bigger than a gig, right? Maybe even smaller than that. Use some kind of copy program to make sure it validates that those files were transferred. And if you have any errors, that you get some kind of error notification around it as well. Okay. Well, that was fun, guys. Let's see. What else do we have? Brian, why don't you go back to your last point on the notes there, or the one you didn't cover.
Okay. About tablets?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. This could be a kind of a group discussion. We touched on it last week a little bit about if you think tablets are taking over the computing future and are desktops dying off, and how long do you think there will be desktops with all the enhancements in tablets like the iPad 2 or 3, you know, if that's coming out, and the influx of Android devices as well. I kind of would just put it out there on the table and see what anyone has to say about it.
Yeah, Andrew, you're the enterprise guy out there.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to get, let me ask you this question, so are we ever going to get a point where the desktop goes away?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I was working on a project for a large chemical company back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And by this time, they envisaged that all their plant engineers would be using head-up display through goggles, and they'd be using, you know, forearm-based keyboards. And, you know, we were on an aggressive bleeding-edge path to get them there.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know of any technology that's out there like that now, but... I guess that's where we've had clients wanting to be.
Right.
With respect to tablet, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. I'm still in a way failing to see a lot of value. I think the true multitasking tablets will probably be the ones that, you know, really set the bench. Like, I don't think the iPad's there yet. But I think the raft of dual core stuff that looks like it's about to come down the pipe may change that all very rapidly.
Yeah, I guess I don't see it, you know, going anywhere as far as in, you know, an enterprise environment so much as, you know, for the home user. I could see people, you know, not buying desktops and just going for the tablets, you know, for, you know, browsing the web and basic functions. So I guess that's sort of my opinion on it.
Yeah, something to replace the netbook so that you sit on the couch with a tablet rather than sit on the couch with a keyboard in front of you type of thing. Or
I know,
Gordon, Gordon, tell me what you think.
I think for the home user, it's a character thing. And the more technical person will be using a desktop and be hard to be ripped away from that. But on the enterprise side, I think the real issue there is the fact that the iPad and the Samsung Tab and stuff just aren't rugged enough to be able to handle what the enterprise is looking for. They're looking for like a tough book solution, things like that.
But that's just a manufacturing change, right? I mean, that's just building a tougher tablet that can be carried around.
Yeah, you could throw an iPad and an OtterBox and probably do the same thing.
You know, all week I'm helping our organization migrate from Windows XP to Windows 7, and so I've been walking around the building, and I have these half-hour interviews that I meet with people, and I'm literally just carrying my laptop in my hand. I'm not even closing it because I don't want to mess with opening it back up again, having to bring it back to life and all that crap. So literally I'm walking around with my laptop open in the building, you know, sitting down with folks doing stuff. And I often think, wait, it'd be nice if I could kind of do this on a tablet, you know, instant on. But I'll be honest, there's nothing like a keyboard to do some of that stuff on. And I'm not going to use the on-screen keyboard on an iPad to do some of the heavy-duty typing or whatever that I need to do. Certainly from a blogging perspective, I would never – we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I would never use I never use a tablet device for that. Brian, you look like you need to say something.
Oh, I was just – no, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I mean, I have my keyboard, and when I'm blogging, I need it.
Christian's dad is doing jumping jacks in the background. Not sure why. That's great. Christian, where do you think we land in 5 to 10 years from a hardware standpoint? PCs, tablets, phones, they're all out there now. Do we just have a variation of those?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a variation. I was just thinking when we were talking about tablets last week that you know who uses them a lot now is the medical industry. One of the most common industries that use them for all sorts of stuff. Really, I mean, you'll see them doing charts and stuff, and you know, writing in notes right on the tablet. But yeah, I think they're gonna become more important in the business industry as well. And we've seen them there a lot already. So it's just a question of when, where, how and why and how long it's going to take for all the home users to adopt them.
Well, in very specific job purposes is kind of what I've seen. And, you know, even in a fitness center environment where you would be, you know, a trainer would be needing to input data about somebody doing some training, that would be, you know, having an iPad in their hand. It's light, it's portable, you can move it around. It's big finger, you know, inputting a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I think a perfect application for like that in the medical field, some of those things where you just need to input a little bit of data or choose points or, you know, whatever, select a few things. I think that's the perfect iPad or tablet type of application. Certainly from a workstation environment, I mean, I think the PC's here to stay and it's going to be around for a long time yet in some form or fashion, whatever that turns out to be. I mean, it'll be a commodity. It already is, I think, probably for the most part. Gordon, do you have a tablet device of any kind?
I don't. I have the Samsung Vibrant, the 4-inch smartphone. That's about it.
All right. And that Vibrant Samsung, that's on AT&T?
It's no. T-Mobile.
T-Mobile. And 4G?
Nope, it's the previous one.
3G, and is it running Android
2.1. And
there's
a 2.2 out there, but the T-Mobile forums have a lot of stuff that's I'd rather not mess with it.
Yeah, I hear you. We just got, so I'm on Sprint, I'm on Epic. We just got Froyo, which is 2.2. And I like 2.2. That was a great upgrade. So I was kind of glad to get that. Although it did this. So 2.2 changes the way the alarms work, right? In there, the alarms you use to wake up. So this morning, overslept, and I went and checked the phone, and the alarms icon was gone. I mean, it's now under clock. And of course, no, it didn't carry it over. It didn't carry the previous. That would have been nice if it would have carried my previous alarm settings over. But no. So be cautious. If you update your phone OS, you might want to check. If you use it to wake up with in the morning, you might want to check it to make sure that your alarms come through. Brian, you have an iPad now.
Yep.
And you're liking that?
Yeah, I like it a lot. And I'm actually getting more used to using the on-screen keyboard.
Yeah.
I mean, you can always get an external keyboard to hook up to it, but I mean, that defeats the purpose of having a tablet device.
It is kind of the best of both worlds, though. You can use it as a tablet when you want to, and if you got to sit down and crank out some text, you can bust out the keyboard. I see that.
Yeah.
I think as these tablets get faster and the dual core processors, and eventually, you know, I'm sure there'll be a quad core, right? I mean, it's coming.
Oh yeah.
I think that's not a bad idea to just have an extra keyboard and throw it on there when you need the keyboard, and when you don't, pick it up and take it with you. So.
Sure.
Andrew, of course, you've got the new WebOS tablet, right?
No. funny. Look, on that, one of the guys at work uses the HTC Desire, same as me, and he's got a Bluetooth keyboard for it. So I thought at the time, why do you do that? Because, you know, I'm one of these people. I use my phone as a phone. I don't use it as a phone plus, you know, note-taking utility plus blah, blah, blah. You know, so, you know, my Desire runs Angry Birds and the like, but I don't use it really as a typewriter per se.
Yeah. All right. Brian, anything?
Yeah,
go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, speaking of typewriters, did anyone see the retrofit kit over at usbtypewriter.com?
No, what's that?
There's a product out there that you can get your hands on where you can take an old typewriter with the hammers in it and insert a bunch of switches into it and turn it into a USB keyboard.
Oh wow!
Which I thought was that's either taking geek to the extreme or it's taking retro to the extreme. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah,
which.
That would be an IBM Selectric that you use as your. Your keyboard.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no. This is going even further back.
Really?
This is going back to your ones without the ball in it, pre-ball typewriter days.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like that's just sitting next to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, clack-a-clack-a-clack, yeah.
You know, Christian, I didn't ask you, but you're just a Winmo guy as a phone. Do you have a tablet? And if you're going to buy a tablet, no, do you have a tablet?
No, I do not.
Okay, and if you were going to buy one, what would you get? At this point,
I think the Asus is coming out with really good stuff for the tablet.
So
that
you're
going to
go completely different. You're not going to go Android. Is that going to run the Android Honeycomb or whatever that OS is?
No, the Asus is Android.
Okay.
They actually have both.
There's Christian's dad piping in. Thanks, Christian's dad.
Piping in over there.
Yeah. So you like the Asus then?
Yeah. Actually, I think. The settlement from that NVIDIA lawsuit on their failing HP tablet, the replacement is going to be one of those new Asus tablets. So there will be one in the network within the next couple months here.
Well, I think at some point, you know, we have three phases of our computing devices. So the first one being the phone, of course, the second one being a tablet device, the portability, and the third one being a full-fledged PC. Now, I did see a commercial being advertised for, I think Motorola has this, right? So you plug the device in the back and the tablet kind of, or at least the tablet screen kind of takes over. And then it's got a little typewriter, Listen, Andrew, you got me saying typewriter. Little keyboard in there. I don't know if you guys seen the commercial for that. And I forget what they call that. Maybe
the Zoom?
Yeah, maybe it is a Zoom. But so I think we're going to see some creative devices coming out over the next couple years as everyone tries to figure out what's exactly right in this tablet form factor. I think we're pretty settled on the phones. I mean, I don't see phones changing all that much in the next 5 to 10 years. They'll get better. There'll be more advancements, but Apple changed the way we do phones, and I think that was a major disruption in the phone sector, and those things are going to stay fairly the same. I think tablets, and of course PCs aren't really going to change at all. I mean, they do basically the same thing they'll do 5 years from now. It'll be better and faster and a lot of that other stuff, but I really think the tablet space is the space where we're going to see most of the innovation that's out there, and so there'll be some new things, you know, coming up from a tablet perspective. So watch for that. And, of course, I think we'll probably talk more and more about the tablet. You know, my wife just Skyped me, and she said if they made a big tablet that had a slide-out keyboard, she would buy that. So imagine if that keyboard
– Acer's just coming out with that.
Really? All right. Well,
yep.
I guess I'll have to
again,
buy one of those.
See, double win. Double win. I'm telling you. It's Acer's. Get rid of this Apple product line here.
We'll have to watch Asus. That's popular among the Johnson family, from what I'm seeing. As recommended. Ooh, maybe that's the new segment that we do. Recommendations from Christian's dad. I think there's some exciting things coming up, and so I'll have to watch for that Asus with the slide out keyboard, and I'll have to buy that right away. Well, the chat room reminds me that that they can't handle too many more late night podcasts. It seems like we keep doing these things later and later. So let me get around to wrapping this thing up. Guys, I appreciate you coming on. I want to let folks know that if they do want to interact with the show, they can send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. That's the way you get in touch with me. And if you want to get in touch with one of these guys, just let me know and I'll forward that email on to them and they will do that. I mentioned last week, and I'll mention it again, this podcast as well as the Fitness Tech podcast are both in iTunes now in the iTunes store. So you can go out and search for those and add them to your RSS feed and you'll never have to miss another podcast again. Zune, you know what, guys? I contacted Zune twice now and I cannot get anybody at Microsoft to get back to me with whatever I need to be in the Zune marketplace. So I know a lot of folks have been asking me about that and, you know, when are you going to get Zune integration? I don't know.
Ask Microsoft.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just added the RSS feed myself. I see. Looks like Gordon did that as well.
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah. Works good. Not in the store. So.
Yeah. What, Andrew? Did you want to say something?
No. Oh. I was just gonna say that I use iTunes, so I catch it that way.
Yeah. We have some links on the front page at theaverageguy.tv that you can just click on and it'll automatically add it to your iTunes library. You can search through the iTunes store. Or if you're in Zune, just copy the RSS feed into Zune and it'll automatically bring it in. You just have to do that one time and the album art comes with it. So sorry, I can't get in the Zune store or whatever Zune marketplace. For whatever reason, maybe they're boycotting me. Or there's no one at the Zune store or the Zune marketplace anymore to actually review that stuff. I kind of have a eerie feeling that we may be seeing the end of the Zune marketplace. And so maybe they've shut all those things off. I did start a Facebook page for The Average Guy. If you just go to Facebook in the search and type in The Average Guy Network, that's the page where I put out all the blog posts and the announcements about the podcast as well as schedule changes. So you can go out there and request to be on that page and get all those automatic updates through Facebook as well. And the last thing is we want to thank you for coming out tonight and joining us on the Home Tech Show. Sorry for the technical problems. We'll blame them all on Skype and say it's Skype's fault. Christian, thanks for making the effort to get signed in all the way from a Hampton hotel. And where are you at again? Hampton Hotel where?
Hudson River, New York.
River, New York. Doing a little weekend vacation. Very good.
That's right.
So good to have you in and on the show. Gordon, thanks for coming out and joining us tonight. And it was good to have you. Your blog is over at Keeping – let's see. Hold on. I'll get this in a second. Over at
my knee-jerk reaction.
There we go. Myknee-jerkreaction.wordpress.com. Folks can check that out. How often are you posting out there?
Whenever I can. Usually, I try to do it once a week, but it doesn't always happen.
All right. Well, and appreciate you coming out and being here tonight, and we'll get you back on the show again soon.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, you bet. It's good to have you here. Andrew, thanks for coming all the way in from Melbourne to join us again. You may become a regular staple around here.
Welcome as always.
Yeah, it's good to have you, and stop rubbing the warm weather in. Speaking of warm weather, Brian, you're never going to get any warm weather up there.
No.
You're screwed in northern Minnesota. So
yeah, pretty much.
But thanks again, and we'll watch for some of those how-to posts over at simplehelp.net, and maybe we can get a few on Christian's new voice.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to trying that out now that he brought it up. So
and now that I've mentioned it like 800 times, right?
Yeah.
So, guys, thanks for coming in, and we'll do it all over again next week. You know what? This show is slowly migrating from 7 to 7:30 to 8, but we'll really try next week, 7 o'clock Central, and join us back again. You can join us live on Ustream, theaverageguy.tv/live. We'll get you there, and we'll do it all again next week. Guys, have a great week, and thanks for joining us on the Home Tech Podcast. Guys, well, we had a major Skype failure there.
Yeah, check. What happened?
Yeah.
You don't hear me?
Yeah, we hear you now.
Cool.
Yeah, we can hear you. We had a major Skype failure. Let's see the chat room. Hold one. I'll have to edit this out.
Is there no video here? I don't know what's going on.
You. Hold on just a sec.
Okay.
Hear us yet? Yeah, we had a major Skype failure. I must have maxed it out from connections. All right. Let's see. Let me check the server here.
You'll be able to edit this, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I
don't, chat's like, oh, no.
Yeah. I am going to hang up here real quick.
Okay.
Can they hear us? No, hold on. Can they hear us in chat? Can you guys hear us yet?
I don't know. It's like I see you guys as a group, but it doesn't look like it's in a call. Like I see your pictures and like the text box, but I don't see that you're in a call. So,
all right. Well, let's see. So, oh, hey, actually, I see you on camera for the first time, but I don't see anybody else. Let's see, Brian. Do we have you?
I can see you.
Okay.
Let me make sure my
guys. Here's what I'm gonna do. There's Brian. So let me bring back in.
I don't see anyone.
Gordon.
This is so weird.
And let me bring back in Andrew.
Yeah, I haven't seen you, Christian, the whole time.
Yeah, we haven't seen you, Christian.
Well, because someone came in here to start printing, so I let them use it because the printer on the other side wasn't working. They accidentally closed out the window I had you guys minimized. So I finally got the internet on the laptop working, so I switched over. But
I gotcha.
I'm going to close it really quick and have you read that.
Actually, here's the deal. I'm going to close everybody out and call you back here in just a sec.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So you streamers, hang on one sec. We'll all be right back.